Welcome everyone to the BBOL show featuring NJ Chat with Nikita and Jewel. We do a couple of segments. This one is Blurred Words, which we do every Saturday at 12 p.m. Eastern time, and we hope you enjoy it. Just a couple of blurs, chatting about things that we like. I mean, we're just regular folks who want to talk about nerdy, blurry stuff, books, music, video games, and TV shows, and we hope you enjoy it. We've done a couple of segments already so far, and one of the things I think is kind of important for everyone to know is that we do three segments, or we will be doing three segments. This one is Blurred Words, like I said, which is every Saturday at 12 o'clock Eastern time, and coming up soon will be a civics one. So if you listen to the previous show, we're just letting you know that's what we're talking about. Okay, civics. Short for politics for me, so to speak. So, welcome. I'm Nikita Jewel.
And I'm Jewel.
Excellent. And we're the hosts of the BBOL show, Blurred Words. All right. So, last week we talked about Ironheart, and we let you know about Riri. It's Ironheart or Riri Woo. This is part two. We're going to do episodes 4 to 6. I'm going to go ahead and open it up and let Jewel do the recap and let you know about what happened last week, because it was pretty exciting. And if you missed it, go ahead and check it. Soon we'll be coming to a podcast near you, every single one of them. It's kind of everywhere you get your podcasts, right? And also check out the website, blurredwords.com. We are using, this is our home, this is our new home, Chatmosa. So welcome. Come in, check us out sometime if you're interested. All right, Jewel, you have the mic.
Thank you, Nikita. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Where did we leave off in the last NJ chat about Ironheart, part one, episodes 1 through 3? Remember that Ironheart is executively produced by Ryan Coogler in collaboration with Marvel Television, Disney Plus, writer Shanaka Hodge, Brian Michael Bendis, Mike D'Addador Jr., inspired by the Eve L. Ewing, Kevin Labrada, Luciano Vecchio, and Matt Millis, Riri Williams Ironheart comics, where she showed up in Invincible Iron Man Volume 3, Number 7, in 2016, and Eve Ewing's bio origin story for Riri Williams' Ironheart was in 2018. We have a live-action cinematic Marvel show on Disney Plus, again, executive produced by Ryan Coogler. And the three episodes we covered last time were Take Me Home, Will the Real Natalie Please Stand Up, and We in Danger Girl. We left off with this fantastic, amazing techno genius, Riri Williams, also known as Ironheart, Miss Riri Williams, from Chicago, getting expelled from MIT, recreating a suit, getting into trouble, wanting to live out her dream, and creating this mech suit to change the world for the better, and falling into the wrong group of company. She falls into a gang of misfits run by a magical person wearing a cloak and a hood called the Hood, Parker Robbins, and we have our last episode, We in Danger Girl, where everything is mayhem, magic, and a guest star, the real baddie of the bad. We find out who Joe, regular Joe Schmo, is. We find out that he is the son of Obadiah Stane. He really is Ezekiel Stane. He's an ethicist. All right. I think I saw when it kicked up. So where we are right now is realizing that the techno ethicist Joe is actually Ezekiel Stane, son of Ironmonger Obadiah Stane, who ran the militaristic branch of Stark Industries. And if we're following the MCU, we know that Obadiah wasn't a great guy, but it wasn't released to the public that he was this evil genius. We just know that he ran branches of Stark Industries. We're left in our last episode of We in Danger, where they have this giant heist called the Heirloom Heist, and they're trying to get into this tech genius's bio lab to take over. So far, they've hit quite a few areas, and this is the last job. And in order to get in, they have to do a feat of technological advancements where nothing can be picked up. So no tech is on the ground. They have to come in and talk to this gentleman. They want him to sign over his rights. They want to basically take over everything and gut the program for themselves. The Hood, this is the Hood's plan for the heirloom heist. Riri is upset. She doesn't know what's going on. She knows there's something really freaky and wrong with that hood that Parker wears. And she thinks that the nefarious actions being done is caused by the influences of the Hood. So her objective at the end of We in Danger is to get a piece of the Hood, but also go into the area she's not supposed to be in because tech is not allowed anywhere near it. She borrows a piece of technology from Ezekiel Stain. He lets her know, I'm putting my life on the line here, and we have to be careful because it's directly tied to me. If this is found out, it's directly tied to me. She goes, no, you could trust me. It's okay. He gives her a pep talk. If you remember, Nikita said that one of the things that really touched her deeply was Gary saying that the best way to know something is to tear it all down and to build it back up to see what it's really made of and how it's made on the inside. Ezekiel Stain tells her in this last episode, we're in danger. Maybe you should take your father's advice, tear yourself down, build it back up and see if there really is a hero in there. And we're left with everything going haywire. Mayhem is a hot mess. Cousin John is dead. The tech is on the ground. Joe's going to be found out that he was helping Riri. The Hood is really magic and evil. They all fly away after Riri's having a panic attack. Natalie's trying to console her and tell her it's okay, it's okay. She's suffering PTSD because she just saw somebody die in front of her and she's at fault. And the magic of the Hood appears to Parker Robbins in the form of a giant mech suit. And he now knows Riri Ironheart killed Cousin John. It's all on from here. The next three episodes will determine who live and who die and what's happening. Magic, mayhem, and the guest star of the Batty Bat. That's where we leave off. Again, remember, release Tuesday, June 24th, 2025, 9 p.m. Eastern. The first three episodes was Take Me Home. Will the real Natalie please stand up? And the last one, We in Danger Girl. And we're rolling into the next three. That was your recap. We hope you heard the last time. Again, as Nikita said, you can check us out on the blog. You can check us out on our website and listen to the last podcast. If you haven't, pause it, listen to it. There's a lot of spoilers, and we'll go from there. Nikita?
Thank you, Jewel. That was really good. Thank you so much. All right, so remember, there are spoilers, so let's make sure we know that up front. I'm so glad you said that, Jewel. All right, so this 4-6, right, is really, I think, Natalie's decision. We like Jewel recapped all the things that occurred. I think that the decision is made, you know, after we last see her crying, and she realizes her family's in danger. She realizes she's got to fix that, build that, get it back, and she needs to make the decision. She is not going to do crime. She is going to fix what she messed up and start to become who she is meant to be, which is Ironheart. A superhero, or a shiro, we can say. When Hood becomes who he is meant to be, an evil supervillain, and then we get to see all the characters come into play. We also get to see what happens when you choose evil versus when you choose good. Even though good sometimes comes, everything comes at a cost. Let's just be clear. The choice you make to be evil, the choice you make to be good, all comes at a cost. I think what the director and what Ryan Coogler did, breaking these up into six episodes, was really smart. Gives you a chance to literally, in each chapter, see her growth, see her choice, you know, and see the decisions each character makes in the game, moving forward. So, as Marvel does, you know, we become very clear who's good, who's bad. So, and I think that that's a conversation that needs to be had. Almost every character in the Marvel Universe, it starts out one way and ends up becoming what they are meant to be, either a superhero or the villain. And I think that's really smart, by the way. In episode 4, we really get to see what happens, and magic is introduced more prevalently. We get to see the cost of using magic. We get to see what happens with Joe and who he becomes. And then we really, really, really wake up to, oh my gosh, this is going to be really finite for somebody in here. I mean, it's going to be an ending, or is it a beginning? We really don't know. I wish we had more episodes than 6, but I hope this is the way it gets a season 2, because I think it's really important. I'm just going to do a quick summary of how I saw that, and then we go into, and Jewel is going to give us the rest of the episodes, or a couple more of the episodes, whatever she chooses to do, because we're going to have a talk about it, and then we open up the floor, obviously. All right? So when we see Johnny and Hood going inside to rob the mansion, we don't know the whole story of what's going on with the mansion, right? Turns out, guess what? That's Daddy. So now we know the Hood has daddy issues. Big surprise. So, and for me, I was like, yeah, I should have figured it was something like that. Very problematic. Very problematic indeed. You know, and as we go in there, before this happens, we also find out how Hood becomes the Hood. But there's, Riri knows for sure that the Hood knows it was her that took Johnny's life. And that's a crisis for her, because she took a life. You know what I mean? And Parker lets her know, Parker is the Hood, that he has plans for her. And so we know, uh-oh, something's getting ready to go down. All right? And we see that Riri and Natalie are talking about this Hood material. A bunch of scenes come up. Riri's mom gets suspicious because Riri's acting funny, acting scared, gives her the watch. We don't know what the watch is going to do, but it's kind of dope what the watch does do, because it's protective. She's got to protect her family. She's putting up cameras. Her and Natalie are talking. They're saying what's getting ready to go down. Natalie is like, just be brave, you know, do what you have to do. You have to take care of your family, you know. She goes to try to make amends to Joe. Joe's in jail. Joe's not happy with her. Big surprise. And Joe becomes who he's meant to be, Ezekiel Stane, right? His real name. And he takes on that legacy. But she doesn't realize at the time what that cost of her being careless is going to happen. And that's what happens when you're an impulsive young person. We've all been young at one time, you know, and we make mistakes and we do things that we're not meant to. We shouldn't do. And then there's a cost. Sometimes she can fix it. Sometimes she can't. At this point, we don't know if she can fix it. Riri tries to apologize. Joe's not with it. And she realizes that somebody's getting ready to take her life. And she's got to do everything, whether it be Hood or whether it be Joe, right? So with Joe in jail, she doesn't know what's going to happen. But guess what? Joe gets a visit from the Hood, because the Hood has figured out who Joe is, you know. So we get all these clues of the big match that's getting ready to occur. And she realizes at this point, the only thing she can do is make sure that she protects her family. And then her immediate reaction is to run. But we don't see how that comes into play until the big, big confrontation, right? So she gives her mom the watch. She goes by to see Xavier. Xavier, you know, does another Star Trek thing, right? And compares her to Spock. And she says, I think I'm more like Lieutenant Uhura. That's up for conversation. I thought about it and I was like, you know, your seriousness and sometimes your lack of emotion at serious things might make you Spock, even though Uhura was the engineer and the comms person. I see her as more than that. So I kind of saw how he looked at it. Again, another conversation that can be had about how we see ourselves reflected in our heroes, our superhero TV shows and science fiction ideas. Who do we play in those movies, in those TV shows? Who are we as those characters? I thought that was pretty brilliant, and I kind of liked how that occurred. I'm going to go ahead and give it to Jewel to kind of, because I'm kind of interested how she saw this moment where they're at the White Castle. A lot of things happen at that White Castle, because that is where things, she meets with Zelma. And like I said, magic becomes more into play. Jewel, you have the mic.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So we're at a turning point, a point of inflection. We know that we're dealing with influences beyond control. We know that Selma is a self-taught magician, which she had the opportunity or was denied the opportunity by her mom to join Kamar Taj, which is the magician school, because it's too dangerous. And we know the origins of the cloak, and Riri needs help. The reflection of Spock, and if I could tap into that, Spock pretty much acts as if he can do things alone. He's the logical character. He's the one that has thought all possible scenarios. He doesn't need emotion to get in the way. And he's just here to offer wisdom, logic, and advice because he already knows what's right and wrong. We are dealing with things beyond her control because it's magic. And so she has to tap into this vulnerability of, I have put this group in harm's way. I have literally caused the death of someone, and now I need somebody's help. And I need to understand this. And the only way to understand this logically is to have a one-on-one with the person who could maybe make it make sense. And that's where we get the conversation at the White Castle with Selma. Because Selma is, as I said, the self-taught witch. She is rumored to be in Strange Academy, which is based on the Marvel comics of magic-based Sorcerer Supremes, learn individuals being taught the mystic arts and how to control chaos. And she's telling her, look, my mom said in the last episode that this is a source of nature. This cloak is old. This is not something to play with. And it's a source. It's a natural source. It's not created by anything. It's been here longer than we know. And the source of its power must come from something bigger. We have giant name drops. We hear the name Dormammu mentioned multiple times. And Riri's like, okay, sure, bet. Because she does not understand the ramifications of what that means. And she's still thinking on a tech level. And someone's like, no, you don't understand. This is major. This is huge. She's like, okay, well, first of all, how convinced are you that this Dormammu big head looking alien guy is running the show? And someone's like, well, I mean, you know, I'm at 50%. And anyone else would be like, Finny, you're not even sure. But not Riri. Riri takes it in calculation as logical. It's like, okay, 50%. If that's the case, where do we go from here? And they're about to create a strategy of how they're going to destroy the cloak and figure out its power source when the gang shows up. Now, remember where we left off? And Nikita so brilliantly explained it. We have Zeke. Now, Ezekiel Stane has taken over the moniker of Zeke. And he has been given an objective of taking Riri out because they share this revenge. We have the guilt and this feeling of anger because Riri is guilty of putting his life and blowing it up, blowing up his Joe persona and forcing the world to see Ezekiel Stane for who he never wanted to be seen as his father's son, but as an evil person. Because remember, nobody has blown the cover story on Ironmonger. Nobody knows Obadiah. saying was part of the terroristic operation in his bed. He just died, and he was this great philanthropic dude. So now we have the son of Obadiah Stane maligning the character of this man and Stark's legacy because the biotech was left in the greenhouse floor. And Hood goes to him and is like, we got it. We have a common enemy. We're going to go get her. And he has told the group, Clown, the Blood Twins, he has told them, and Slug, that Riri killed Cousin John. And the one thing that was the most important to everyone in the group, the one thing that was important to John, was loyalty. And Riri broke that trust. Remember, Riri also broke the trust of Zeke by leaving his tech behind, thus it being traced back. They show up at the White Castle, and Riri's like, oh, snap. I think you're going to have to slip out the bank, girl, because things are going to get heated and hot. And Thelma says, you sure you're going to be okay? And Riri says, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good. Remember, we go back to the armor. We go back to the, I don't need your help. I'm fine. The whole point of the late night discussion was for help. She sees people are in danger. She sees the crew is coming after her. She sees this is all her fault. She does not want another person's life in her hands and the destruction of that life. So she says, Thelma, go. Thelma goes. She's like, you ain't got to tell me twice. I see this is not going to be great. To bring up the watch, that was so dope. That was so cool. That was so Star Trek-y. We have so many instances of Star Trek all the way through. If you're talking about concussive force and force fields, we know that every starship going through space has force fields at layers. And we know that they can protect themselves going through this space. And so she gives her mom this watch. The mom gets upset, and a lot of people get upset, and she ends up having one. And the Blood Twins come in and are like, you know, we're just going to have to kill you. And Ruby's like, well, okay. I figured we was going to be here anyway. Like I always knew, when I walked in that from the jump of the elevator that I may end up in this predicament. And the most coolest thing ever happens as they decide they're going to take her out. They fight, they go through all this back and forth because, you know, their fighter's expertise is the brawn, the muscle. She says, just make it quick, man. Don't torture me. Don't beat me up. Just make it quick. One shot, clean. I'm owed at least that. And that causes them to be taken out. I love it. It was great. In comes Clown. And Clown is a sociopath. Like a psychopathic, hilarious, perfect evildoer. And Riri tries to appeal to her better nature, unfortunately. But maybe fortunately. Because in the next episode, it may have worked. Okay? We know, going through this, Riri is the better logical thinker. She really quite literally is Spock. She has timed it all out. She's going through scrapes, cuts, and bruises, and eventually she gets free. She runs away. Clown is left with a question of, you know, Hood don't think of none of y'all. Y'all think that I broke the loyalty code, and I have not. What happened to Rampage? And do you think any of y'all are anywhere above Rampage? You are all expendable. None of you are important. The only thing that's important to Parker is the Hood. Pay attention. Pay attention. She runs to the street. She tries to get away. Slug tries to take her out. They have stolen the suit. Slug is a technician. That's all Slug is. Slug ain't about it. Them nails aren't going to get cracked, chipped, or nothing. The moment Riri gets her suit back, that's it. Slug is like, I'm out. I did what I was supposed to do. I had the suit. It's gone. Riri got it. I'm not about this life. My manicure is too good, and I'm looking too fine in this outfit. Bye. And Riri thinks she gets away. And in the next episode, in the street, on the outskirts of White Castle's visage, which, by the way, was hilarious. check out all the Easter eggs. When she lands, as she's fighting, the sign that said the special for White Castle, it actually says, ouch. Look at it. It's O-U-C-H, exclamation. I love that. That is so comic book. I just laughed and laughed and laughed. It was brilliant. You know, whoever's writing this, again, shout out to the great Shanaka Hodge, because brilliant, brilliant. Thank you so much for loving our comic book fans' hearts, because it's just so cute and lovely and wonderful. Zeke shows up bio outfitted. He is now Ironmonger 2. He is biotechnologically advanced. We know earlier on she was helping him out with something he was trying to do earlier with his arm. His whole body is decked out, tricked out. He's ready to take her out. And he's angry. But in reality, wouldn't any of us be? We're all facing this moment with her, rooting for her, because people make mistakes. But this man was living a quiet life, doing his own quiet mediocrity thing. And this little girl shows up and blows his world up, and he trusted her. And he thought maybe this could be a good friendship where he gets to live up to his own ideals and dreams, not having to live in the shadow of his dad. Turns out he has a mechanical monster looming over him as well. Just like his dad had Iron Man, he has Iron Heart. And they fight. Riri pleads, come on, man, we're friends. You don't need to do this. He's like, what do you mean? I don't need to do this. You did this. You did this. We're all here because of you. And eventually she says, really, I know that you're a good guy on the inside. And I messed up. I know I messed up. I see that I messed up. He rips the backbone of her suit off of her. Just crushes it. Brings it down to bare bones, just her. And he cannot bring himself to kill his friend, Riri Williams. Because in that moment, he's angry, he's upset, his life is torn apart, he is a villain, he's an escaped convict, and his body's no longer human. But the humanity that he gives her, the grace that he gives her is, I'm not going to fight with this suit anymore, and the suit made you do this. I've ripped it from you, but I'm not going to kill you. He wants you dead, Riri, so run, because I can't promise the next time I see you, I won't have to kill you. I don't think she understands the grace that that took, because she is just coming off of the feeling of, I'm alive. Woo! Thank God. Clown sees the interaction. Hood is obsessed. They have a meeting. Tell me what happened. Now, we know this man is evil. Nikita's already said it. The last flashback that she gives, this we have realized Riri is a hero. The Hood is the villain. And he is as evil as they get. And he wants every single dirty, nasty detail of how you took out and snuffed out the life of Ironheart. Tell me. And Ezekiel Stane is a mediocre white man and shaking in his boots. And he really cannot give it to him because he didn't kill his friend. And he couldn't be brought to that point. I just beat her up in the suit and boom, she's dead. He says, you know, I don't believe you. Because if that happened, you would have given me everything. And you didn't. And I'm not convinced. Clown, being the sociopath that she is, chimes in. Oh, I saw it. And Riri kicked every single one of our buttocks. Our booties were just down. We were out. We were smashed. Nobody was going to save our lives. It was an ASS kicking. And then Ezekiel looks at her. And then Zeke shows up. And he ripped the suit right off of her. Really smashed her to bits. And as she opens her mouth to say the next line, we know everyone in the room feels, oh my God, Hood's going to kill this white man. We're going to have to clean up this mess. It's going to be dirty. This is bad. And Riri's still alive. Oh my goodness. and clown lies and says, and then he buried her body in the suit out in the back. She's gone. And the hood is satisfied because if anybody was going to tell him the truth, it's going to be the sociopath that also enjoys seeing death and dismemberment. So we good. Everybody's good. Hood says he's got another job. Hood says things are going to happen. And they all leave except for Slug. Slug cannot believe that he nearly chipped his nails having to go after this crazy lady, Riri. And he's tired. And Clown says, do me a favor. He said, can I take a nap first? He says, sure. She says, sure. Clown says, sure. But I want you to look up an autopsy report for me. And we now know, as I toss it back to Nikita, Clown believes what Riri has said. Clown sees that everybody's life is in danger. And maybe it wasn't Riri who was disloyal. Maybe there was never loyalty here. And it was always about the hood. And it was always about Parker Robbins. Maybe we should all be really paying attention to what's going on in the back end. And that's the recap for the next episode. We got one more to go, y'all. Nikita.
Thank you, Jewel. No, that was brilliant. And that's why I always pass it to her, because she finds a way to sum it up in such a good way. So that while I can think in my head, yeah, I don't agree with that. Talking about the Spock thing, I was like, no, ma'am. I'm thinking Spock myself personally. You know, like I said, she is right. Jewel is correct in that. You can say it. You can say it. I feel you. That Spock has no emotions. All right. And sometimes when Riri seems very disconnected from that, I agree with the logic, because logic is important. But Spock did at least, you know, use his team and ask his team for help. Riri is just completely independent in how she does things, which is why there's such a problem. She doesn't ask for help until it's catastrophic. And, you know, when she finally breaks down and tells her mom, and then she doesn't even tell her mom the whole truth. She goes to the magic shop. And Zelma picks up on it, because Zelma's a very intuitive witch, which, again, puts everybody in danger, because we don't really know what the hood material can do. She doesn't tell her mom the whole truth. And then when her mom, you know, challenges her with it when she's leaving the store, she, you know, instead of saying, yeah, you're right, mom, she acts like a child again and then takes off. And this is very disrespectful, by the way. Everything in me was like, I know you didn't, but then she takes off in the thing. And then, you know, if that had been Spock, I agree that she is like Spock in the way that she's logical, but it was illogical to be with her mom that way. And in that way, she might have been more like Dr. McCoy, because Lieutenant Uhura would have been able to communicate that effectively. But we don't want to go down through the line of the Star Trek personalities. So, because we know that Dr. McCoy didn't seem to have control of his emotions sometimes. Very good part. Every person in Star Trek, which is why I like Star Trek so much, not only for the technology, but that each character is an ensemble of personalities that could be any one of us at any time. Let me go ahead and give Jewel props in the breakdown for many, 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 many reasons that, you know, her description of how Clown, who is definitely a sociopath, and handled Hood, because understanding, you know, that if she had said that Riri wasn't dead, Hood would have melted Joe's head. Okay? Something bad would have happened. And the look that Joe gave. And I could revisit that as Jewel was explaining it and going through it. Really, really a brilliant summary of episode 5. And a lot of things occurred in episode 5. I challenge you when you're watching it also just to check out the Easter eggs. I was laughing pretty much when that ouch came up. And I can't believe on the back end, you all don't know that Jewel and I, we talk about these things before we bring it here and we discuss it. On the back end, we get in these really in-depth nerd conversations, and then we come in and we're like, you know, very, very deep and in-depth. So I think that when that happens, you know, I look at things a whole lot differently. Everything's good with everybody? Hurrah. Hurrah. That makes me happy. So when we're talking about episode 5 going into episode 6, I think one of the things that I got kind of emotional about in episode 5 was the meeting with Gary. I don't know how I would feel if I'd seen my deceased sibling, you know, as a hologram. I just don't know. It's a different reaction than the mom had. The mom missed her husband so much, she wanted her husband back. The brother missed his sister so much, he had accepted that she was gone, and then there she is. That's a hard thing. And it's also really, really separates the emotions. And then the choice that Riri felt that she was going to have to make, and the emotion that Natalie, indeed, as her subconscious, played out, you know? And then when Riri says, you know, she's torn. She's torn into what to do and how to do it. And we see when we end up in with her mom back at the garage, right? And Natalie helps her regain the memory that will allow her to move forward, to make a real choice, to make a true choice, to make the right choice. You know, is the memory of her and her stepdad dancing to Brown Skin Girl. I got kind of choked up a little bit about that, and I think a lot of people watching that would get choked up. I love how they did this with people walking in the background as if they could see what is going on, right? The hologram is presenting the Natalie is presenting the image for the memory, which is it was just really beautiful. Her as a little girl, her and her stepdad dancing. You see the sign, you see everything play out, and you could really feel that love and that emotion. And that's hard for a lot of people that make movies and things to be able to make you feel. And that tells me that's a real talent, right? And that's also another thing that I believe they did so well in this miniseries, I'll call it. And when they finish it, you realize Gary called her Iron Head in the wrench, right? On the wrench, when the tool hits her head, you know, and she realizes that I don't need to forget anything about the time we had. What I can do is love and enjoy the good times and grieve and accept the loss. No matter how hard it is, you don't have to forget everything to have the memory of that and keep the love that you have. And it kind of helps her to, again, here we see her becoming. It kind of helped Riri a little bit more. And then she tells Natalie, you're a glitch, but you're my glitch. And I loved it. And, you know, you see the static, the kind of intermittent of it, which really gets into your head. You know, she's not real. She's not solid. But she solidly is a part of her and her subconscious. Mom does a cool thing, bringing the car out, and the statement, and at this point, I think the statement that really gets me is when Riri says, the car would always keep her safe, the car that her stepdad was rebuilding, you know, and look, the truth comes to light, that new suit that she builds is from that car. I just like that whole segment and that whole scene. When we flash back over to when Joe and Riri, I guess that situation where he rips her spine out, that was pretty grotesque, man. That was pretty gross. I said, that is so visual. Like, he literally, as the Bionic Man, rips the spine out of the outfit. This is the big fight we're talking about here. You know, so we're moving to that. And when you watch that, tell me you didn't cringe, because I cringed when he was ripping it out. Even when Jewel was recapping it. Really, really watch those scenes. Really, really think about what's happening and what the real growth is on both parts. Hood's growth into grossness and psychosis, and the Hood taking him over, not just as we see his marks getting more and more, his whole neurological pattern has changed. He went from kind of a passive criminal, like a dude that just had a reason to get this. He was doing payback. We knew payback for what, not for sure, but he was really, really driven by that. And then he really started to hunger. He really, really started to hunger. I thought that was very, 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 very interesting. So I think his growth and his depravity, he just becomes more and more of a monster, I think. You know, he becomes more obvious. And we see prior to episode 5 ending, going into episode 6, thanks to Jewel's brilliant recap, we find out about Hood's father and how disrespectful that man is. I don't understand why Hood made the choice he made for crime instead of just becoming a better businessman and a better human. He let his daddy issues get in the way. And when his father says, "Oh, I didn't want you," that was cold-blooded. I thought that was cold-blooded. I thought that was very, wow. Like, that was straight up, you know, no chaser. You were a problem. I didn't want to deal with the problem. And I didn't want you. So we know what's getting ready to happen at this point. And it all builds up to it. Hood has tilted over the edge. He has made enslaved Joe by software design. And we are really seeing things amp up. And I don't know if everyone could feel it, but I could feel the amp up. I could feel the amp up. Even when, as each segment was breaking, you see on one hand, Riri rebuilding the suit. Everybody's helping. The team is helping. It isn't just her doing it by herself. And they're going to use magic. And the prevailing thing is, any time you use magic, there is a cost. And she was willing for the cost, but she didn't realize that the cost would be Natalie. Now, we're going to probably end up having a conversation about whether Natalie is the soul or Natalie is the subconscious, but I'm going to go ahead and say I think that, and I guess the question will be, is your subconscious your soul? I don't know, because we can't see it. Everybody has an opinion, but the dynamic in the message that's given here, what is it clearly? The only thing that we know for sure is Natalie is gone. In episode 6, where the past is the past, you know, you meet Mephisto, and Mephisto is, you know, catching Parker as he's criming at this mansion, and, you know, it's him and Johnny, and Mephisto catches him in the tunnel, takes him to the secret door, they go into the restaurant, they're sitting down, the question is asked, what do you want to be, what is it that you want, what is it that you dream of? After him and Han, Parker finally says, I want to be king. Talk about big ambition. You know, some of us just, you know, want to be happy. Some of us just want to have a nice house. Some of us just want to, you know, live a decent life and not go to jail. No, he wants to be king. Does that sound familiar? I'm not saying. I'm just saying. All right. So they shake on it. And because he says, what's the price? What's the cost? He says, oh, you won't miss it. And they shake on it. We know. You shake hands with the devil, shake hands with bad guy, shake hands with anybody, it's going to be your soul. Okay. Wow. Wow, Parker. You gave your soul, you know, and look what it brings us to this point right now. You know, and I'm going to go ahead and let Jewel bring us in to episode 6. The past is past. Jewel, you have the mic.
Okay. Thank you so much, Nikita. Brilliant. I love the way you break it down. I'm going to say that we are met with the confusing, heartfelt, unadulterated concentration of emotion, logic, magic, and tech all fighting for one space. and resolutions where we have a deciding factor of what this means. We know that Riri's reached out for help, and I think that in terms of subconscious and soul, I think they're both the same. Although Xavier's going through the having to be faced with the visage, this holographic imprint of his sister, and he is, it's been 5 years, y'all. I mean, it's been 5 years. I thought it was a lot sooner, but we know that it's been 5 years since the death. And he's gone through his steps of mourning. He's accepted that his life from here on out will continue without his sister being there. His life will continue without that smile, that laugh, and everything that comes with it. And now he's forced to see her laugh and smile the way Riri emotionally felt it, heard it, and experienced it, because she is a brain scan made vividly clear in holographic form. So she's not Natalie, can't touch her, she can't touch you, but she is all emotion made for us to see. He accepts that this is something that Riri didn't do intentionally, nor did she seek out to want to do this, but we're here now. And whatever she needs to do, he's going to help. And he hands her an olive branch of, I don't feel comfortable being around her, but I understand what you're doing, and I'm here to help. And he opened up the headset that she had given her, because he splits tracks, you know. He's a DJ on the side, just a little bit. He's a mixer. And she was wondering why he had these beat up old headphones. And he confesses they were Natalie's. I can't seem to get rid of them. Every rip, every tear. She was so disrespectful in borrowing them, I couldn't get rid of them. And Riri didn't know they were a gift from Natalie. And when she opens up the card, he opens up the card. It is a quote from James Tiberius Kirk, or Captain Kirk, which I think Riri is, if we're going to talk about, we can't mention Spock, we can't mention Uhura, we can't mention Bones, and then not mention Captain Kirk. Come on, people. What are we even doing? Okay? Are we even blurreds if we don't even mention Captain Kirk? I'm just saying. So the quote is from James Tiberius Kirk, Captain Kirk, and the quote is this: "My friend, of all the souls I've encountered along my travels, hers was the most human." And Xavier says, "It was the quote that got me." And she says, "Yeah, the soul I was talking about was," and they both say, "it's Natalie's." So for me, Natalie is Riri's soul, because she is the actual photocopy, Xerox copy, if y'all remember Xerox copy, the microfiche, the whatever you want to say, the carbon copy when we used to be writing with the credit cards and then we had that little black paper and you had to, that of everything Natalie was to Riri. Literally, she says, the soul. So it's right there in Captain Kirk language, vernacular. I mean, y'all need to rewind it and see. Of all the souls, hers was the most human. And so I wrote it down. Some people call me the feds. I disagree, but it's there. Y'all can rewind and go check it out. So I'm thinking it's the same. It's okay. And this is my opinion. Opinions are not facts. We don't have to agree. It's okay. That's lovely. Wonderfulness about Blurred's Word. We want to hear everything y'all have to say. We don't have to agree with you, and you don't have to agree with us. We just want you to have a voice. So thank you for indulging us, for listening to our voice, because that really is important. Black women and blurreds out there being able to say what they have to say and not be rejected, denied, or shut up for it. So thank you, everyone, for honoring us, just listening and just checking it out. So in my opinion, Natalie is her soul, and Natalie is an amalgam of all the things that she's wrestling with at the moment. And we know we got to take this dude out. He's going to come for her. He's going to come for everyone she loves. And there's no way she can do this alone. And she has a team now. She's got Zelma working on the magic, and the magic has to be the power source, because she cannot fight who we think Dormammu is the source of the cloak. And we know as the audience members, it's not Dormammu. We know that. Because he's not a big head looking alien. You know, we know that. And so she thinks she's fighting Dormammu. This is going to be the source, and we need magic to fight magic. You need to fight magic with magic. She's going to house Tech, the suit, with the power of magic, and maybe be able to take the cloak, destroy it, and put everything back to where it needs to be. Landon comes back in, y'all. He really wants his wagon, and he's like, man, you know every day was interest, right? You done borrowed it. You didn't give it back. You didn't give me my $20 every day. You know, what you think this is? You just freeloading, just taking my wagon, and I can't even be hustling in the streets no more because you got my wagon, bro. What? And then he sees Miss Natalie, and he's like, wow, Miss Riri really is amazing, and he wants to help. So he's going to help. And he ain't even gonna squeeze them for some pennies. So that was really nice of him and very kind. Good looking out, little man. You're doing all right. Xavier's there, you know, being moral support. Mama Ronnie's there to make sure nobody does craziness, because we ain't going to blow up anything until it's time to blow up everything. And she's a mama, and everybody's going to be safe. And we're ready. We're ready. It's going to be the showdown. We know this is it. Everybody thinks Riri is dead. Remember, Clown told Hood she's dead. He goes to his daddy's house. Nikita's right. And he's got big, giant, fat stacks of unresolved emotional damage that his daddy gave him. And if you peeped it, and I know I've been late on the blog, but the blog's going to go up in a few days. I have taken a screenshot of why all of these heists, all of these jobs are connected. His father is the CEO of Artworks. His father is connected to all the places they've been hitting. He is affiliated and tied into the heirloom heist, the greenhouse mech stuff, biological greenhouse stuff. He is affiliated with the underground tunnel. And so it's all been about his daddy and replacing him, squashing him, and being the bigger, dirty, filthy. He wants to be stinking, dirty, filthy, rich. Like, he said it with the most, you know, the most horrible, poisonous accent I've ever heard. And, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, sure, but it's also the root to evil is greed. And the man is greedy, and he's filled with avarice and greed. And he just wants to get back at the person who his whole life threw him out when he was 12 and said, it was nothing personal, but I never wanted you. That's some cold-hearted stuff. If we were a different show, you would be hearing a lot of spicier words coming from me. But he's hurt. He's upset. He's angry, and he's vindictive, and he's evil. And this demonic character is going to take his soul and give him everything he thinks he wants. But remember, what we want is not necessarily what we need. And what we need sometimes is so much better than what we think we want. And when you're dancing with the devil in the pale moonlight, the devil doesn't want to give you what you want. The devil wants you. And however he can get you, he's going to get you. And we have a fight. We have a fight. But before we have a fight, Zelma says, okay, let's power up the suit. Everybody's happy. Xavier's even not so shook up that Natalie's Natalie, because, you know, he's getting used to it. Zelma says, Are you sure? Are you sure? He's like, yeah, we ain't got no time now. They coming. They coming for me. I'm certain he knows I'm alive. They gonna come. We gotta do this. We gotta do this now. Now. And as she starts the incantation, the soul of the suit, the soul of Riri, Natalie, disappears. And she's scared. For the first time in a very long time, we no longer think of her as just a holographic image. We see fear, desperation. And it's almost like a hum. It's a battery between one and the other. It's between Natalie and Riri. What are you doing? Stop it. We got it. Hold on. Let me back it up. Wait, I'm going to put you on the laptop. We got you. I'm going to save you. I'm going to save you. And once again, we suffer another loss, another death in front of her eyes, in front of the room full of people. And it is the most heartbreaking death we all have felt so far. And it leaves the room with an emptiness. And she's got to fight without Natalie. And she goes for Hood, Parker Robbins. And they're just gonna battle royale. This is it. It's over. I'm taking a Hood. And Parker calls her on it. This whole time, you thought you were the hero and you were the good guy, but you just wanted the power for yourself. Riri says, nah, I didn't want that. I just want you to stop doing your nefarious deeds. And he's like, no, you want this. This is what you want. I'm not going to spoil the fight for you. She ends up taking it, and one of the most important parts of it for me was, it hurts. Give it back. And she says, I know. And no. Remember, he did a deal. And without this Hood, he is empty. We hear that before. There are other moments where he's talking to Mephisto and he's like, I need more. I need more. You promised you'd give me more. You'll give me more power, more things. He said, I gave everything you wanted and you just wasted it. If you end up keeping the Hood, so we foreshadow it. If you end up keeping this Hood, maybe I might give you what you're asking for. He says, so you have power, give me more power. And if I keep it, right? And Mephisto says, we'll see. We'll see. He says, I just feel empty. I just feel empty. I did everything you wanted me to do. I did everything I wanted to do. And I just feel empty. We're fighting again. We're going to fast forward. Fighting, and the cloak is no longer around him. And he says, it hurts. It hurts. She says, I know. And I'm left, me, Jewel, I'm left with this feeling of, man, it must feel really, really empty. You don't even have the vengeance and the power filling you up, because where your soul used to be, they ain't got nothing left. You just have the scars for your trouble. She leaves with the cloak. And we end up back in a pizza shop. Now, I'm going to say this again. If you guys haven't been a fan of mythology, y'all really need to look that up. When you are having a meeting with Hades or anyone else in that vicinity of the nether, of the other underworld, the far beyond and never above, always below, never, 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 never eat anything they offer you. Never consume metabolics if an evil thing is giving it to you. That is a contract. Do not eat nothing. First of all, you can't be eating it from everybody. You can't be eating in everybody's restaurant or everybody's house. Y'all know that already. We know that. We know this. Why? Just because of pizza? Like cheese covers stank? I don't understand. I don't understand that. Y'all gonna have to explain that to me later, maybe in the comments or whatever. But don't eat when the devil's offering you something. Don't eat. Don't jump. That's a base need. You know, animalistic, we hunger, we need to feed, and so we feed. And so you could get, that smells good. Yeah, it's gross. Not judgy. It's a fact. Look it up. You think about pomegranate seeds and the kidnapped young lady who was told don't eat nothing in the underworld, and she just ate 3 seeds, and that's why we have winter. Y'all ain't paying attention. And then the apple and Eve. You're not supposed to eat. If the devil in any kind of incarnation offers you something to eat, do not eat it. Do not eat it. Like, don't eat the apple. Don't eat the pizza. Don't eat the pomegranate seeds. Don't eat the fairy food. Don't eat it, people. Just don't. We know the Parker ate it when he shook the hand. And now we have a dance between Mephisto and Riri. And Riri's empty. Her soul is gone because Natalie is gone. And she has the cloak. And he says, I can give you everything you want. Well, what does she want? In her brain, in her heart, she wants her AI back. She's not so presumptuous and absolutely mad that she's saying, bring me back my dead friend. That's not what she's thinking. She's thinking of all the times she rejected the AI, all the times she pushed the AI away, all the times she didn't listen to her subconscious, she didn't listen to her soul. She refused to embrace the most human of her. She pushed it away because it was just, it's a glitch. It's a problem. It's, these emotions are messy. I just want the wires. I just want the circuitry. I just want the ones and zeros. Do we have to get into the loss? Do we have to get into, I don't want any of that. Just give me the specs. Give me the blueprints. Give me the instructions. Can I just do that? Can we just talk about repulsion and magnetism and the give and take? Can we just keep it clean? Keep it simple. Keep it logical. I don't want the messy. And it's flashbacking in her head, and Mephisto being the slimy evildoer that he is, he's thinking friend. He's thinking Natalie, the flesh and blood corporeal being. There you go, Jennifer, corporeal. This blurb uses it. and he's like, I got you. Everything you want. And she says, what's in it for you? What do you get? And he says the same line he tells Parker, nothing you're going to miss. Nothing you're going to miss. We all know English translation is just your soul. Nobody really thinks about their soul in these movies and in these shows, in these comic books. The soul is some nebulous thing that people talk about, and it's not important, and it has nothing to do with you. But if y'all ask Ghost Rider, it's important. If you're talking about Mephisto and Dormammu and other, it's important. If you're talking about other things, it's important. But for everyone else, it's just some nebulous word that people toss around. And nobody thinks it's important until it's important, until you're empty and you're lost and you're in purgatory or limbo or worse. Okay. And so she starts calculating, I could get my AI back and I can do things differently. I can fix what I've destroyed. And Natalie, the autonomous intelligence, can be replaced because I'm so empty without her. And we see Mephisto for who he is. And peep that in the spoon, in the cup, because it's the perfect amount. It's a perfect image. If you've ever copped or gotten a comic book with Mephisto's image on there, they did a great job. And the devil's in the details, so check the spoon. And when she shakes his hand, we are fast forward into the future, and she is still working diligently. If I do this, then this will happen. All the whiteboards are being used. She got her beautiful hair out. It's been a while, and she's still trying to get Natalie back. And Natalie shows up, and she goes, whoa, this is wonderful. This is great. I can't believe it. And Natalie's confused. Natalie wants to know how she ended up here, because this isn't where she was just a moment ago. And she doesn't know where she was. But what is she doing in the garage? Why is she here? And Riri just wants to get all up to close and personal and get her back and tell her, run diagnostics, because her AI is back. Everything's going to be bomb. And Natalie looks at her like, what? And step off, step back. You're getting a little too close and I feel uncomfortable and what's going on? And pushes her. Now remember, the mesh collisions weren't working because she was a holographic image. She couldn't touch her physically. But today, she literally pushed her. She said, how did you do that? How did you touch me? How did you push? She goes, I literally put my hand up to your face and pushed. And in this moment, she hugs her. And wouldn't you know it, veins show up on her arm And we think, holy crap, holy, she done made a devil deal with Mephisto. But I have speculation, and I'm going to toss it out there, that Zelma's involved. There's protection. It's not what we think it is, because at the end of this, we know that Riri decided to be the hero, and it all focused around her soul. But her soul disappeared before she made the connection with Mephisto and shook his hand. So if there was no soul to reap because the AI Natalie was gone, she cannot give up her soul. Boom, shakalaka. I said it. I did it. Okay. I'm going to send it to Nikita because sometimes she's got a lot to say. But if you haven't caught it yet, if you have not taken a gander and watched the shows, please, please do. Karma's, let's go over it. Bad Magic, episode 4. Karma's a glitch instead of Karma's a something else. And The Past is the Past is episode 6. So that's 4, Bad Magic, 5, Karma's a Glitch, and 6, The Past is the Past. Ryan Coogler's executive producing. Chinaka Hodge wrote them. Amazing cast. Great soundtrack. We still talking about the soundtrack from before. And the list was up there. Yes, last time we did this last Saturday. Please check it out. And we would love to hear what you have to say. And I can't wait to hear what Nikita has to say, because holy schmoly, there is a lot to read in the chat. Nikita.
Well. You know, Jewel, I thought you did a great job there. And this 4, 5, and 6, before I pass to Jennifer, because I'm going to ask a question at the end of both of you. And then for those listening and that will listen to this, I would like for you to post your answer to that question I asked at the end of this podcast. The question I'm going to ask, I would like for you to either go to the website, blurgewords.com, or go to any app, because I can find it. Okay. But so I'm going to address some of the things that Jewel said before I hand it to Jennifer, because I'm very, very curious what Jennifer is going to have to say. Some of these things, let's be clear, I agree with Jewel. She did an excellent job summarizing. Clap, clap, clap. And it's not an easy thing. This is, we're new at this podcast game, to, you know, decide how we're going to do things. I'm always impressed with my friend, Jewel, and how she presents things. And it makes me lean in. Makes me lean in to hear what she's saying, whether I agree or disagree. Those two things occur also. I'm going to talk about the end, then I'm going to hand Jennifer the mic, then I'm going to ask a question after she finishes. I was touched by that ending, and I was left with also a feeling of, we need to see more of this. We need to know more. We need to understand more. We need to get these characters back, and we need to build that bridge between magic and what Riri is going through, and we need some questions answered. So I'm hoping that Mr. Coogler and his team get it together and do that. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it on to Jennifer. And remember, I'm going to be asking you, I'm Nikita, I'm going to be asking you a question after. Jennifer, you have the mic.
Good afternoon, ladies. It's so good to be with you guys to talk about this series and how it ended. I really love the stuff that y'all talked about. And, of course, this is why I love hanging out with y'all on here, because y'all are talking about some of the themes in the rabbit holes I sort of went down as I was going back through these episodes like a third and a fourth and a fifth time. It just took that much for me to, like, get my thoughts in order. So, thank you for having this space or this podcast, I should say. And thank you for letting me talk about the stuff that I love to talk about. Okay. y'all have covered so much that I noticed a lot of the same things that y'all noticed. So I guess I will try to talk about some of the little rabbit holes I went down, because I know we don't have a whole lot of time, and maybe we could talk more after, in the after pod. I think that's what y'all want to call it. So first of all, in episode 4, Bad Magic, Shout out to the people who wrote this again, Chanaka Hodge and all of the people involved with this. I mean, it seemed like the titles of these episodes were just perfect. Like Bad Magic. Okay. We know what we did with this episode. So, the thing that caught my attention that caused me to go down a rabbit hole was when, I don't know if anybody else does this, but I always have the titles at the bottom for the screen whenever I'm watching something, because sometimes when I'm watching it, I don't hear stuff correctly and I am a blurred and I want to see stuff and sometimes I just don't catch it. And so I noticed that in the scene where they're trying to give honor to John, P.S. I don't like him, but there's something called a Gregorian chant music playing in the background as each of the team members are talking about what they'll miss about John, right? It started making me think that maybe Riri was supposed to be John's replacement. It started making me think about how his Parker's cousin was telling everybody about his loyalty and how it defined him. Yeah, they just had a lot of ways of describing this guy that I didn't really like. But anyway, I started looking up Gregorian chant music, which is a musical theory made up by the Greeks. So this is old stuff. This is 9th and 10th century type stuff. Okay. It came out of Western and Central Europe. And in essence, it started also making me think about why was there the mention in an earlier episode of a Victorian era ghost. And so I was like, okay, so what's that? Is that a connection? And so basically I started, you know, went down this whole rabbit hole about what is a Victorian era ghost? Where does it come from? What culture is it basically from? Stories from an era in European history when Queen Victoria was ruling, and it was an era of where people were going through a lot of social anxieties and people were, you know, becoming fascinated with the supernatural. And I love how I found out that basically it's an example of one of the ghosts from A Christmas Carol, which is one of my favorite ghost stories ever. And I was like, so you mean to tell me that is something that I actually like? I just found that out. I thought it was wonderful. And it made me also think about Natalie, the AI that Riri created, and about how she's a hologram. Or is she a ghost? Is she really the soul of Natalie? And I just kind of came to some type of conclusion where I believe that Natalie is just like one of the ghosts from A Christmas Carol for Riri in this story. She's a catalyst for moral transformation for Riri. And we're watching Riri change in a moral way through the rest of this, the end of this series. So that's kind of the conclusion I came to after I went down that little rabbit hole. I'm trying to figure out, okay, what's this? What's that? What does that really mean? I do love that they do shout out, some of the other, franchises in the MCU, Black Panther, Captain Marvel, Iron Man, Ant-Man. They talked about the different, when she was talking about the heat signatures, right? She was talking about Riri in the scene where she was talking with Nat about Parker's hood, right? And she says, it looks like an internal combustion heat engine. And that got me thinking as well. Because I was like, okay, so what does that mean? What is a combustion heat engine? I was like, what do you mean by that? And I didn't get it at that time, but when I looked at, in a later episode, I decided to go down a rabbit hole on that too, because I really wanted to know why there were these black veins all over Parker as a consequence of him wearing this hood. I was like, is that a connection? And the only thing I could find in the real world that seemed like a connection was how the phenomenon where or the condition where people's blood vessels can burst. Okay. And a lot of times that's from physical trauma, high blood pressure, or weakened blood vessel walls. But I think in this case for Parker, it's this exposure, this excessive exposure to the heat that's coming off of this hood, of this thing that we, you know, find out is Mephisto's gift to Parker when they make the deal, when he makes the deal with him. I thought that was interesting, fascinating, like, really? So this is what's actually happening to him. And it made me think about a series that I watched before where a person was being controlled by a supernatural being, a character named Jack in the Outsider series. He had boils on his neck. And so I was like, so it's like Parker's blood is literally boiling and making his blood vessels burst and make these black, look like black plaques on his skin. It's like, and this is how it's controlling him. This is how Mephisto is controlling him through this hood. And also he's controlling him through the hood with the heat and everything, and it's causing him pain. And it's the same thing that I remember seeing in the that series with Jack. They were basically being controlled by a supernatural being through pain. Let's see. There was a scene where Riri went to visit poor Zeke. Lord have mercy. Poor Zeke. She went to visit Zeke, and he said something to her that was kind of hurtful. He said, "You're just a selfish kid who can't take any responsibility for yourself." And I was like, wait a minute, what? She's the kid here? I was like, hey, you ain't that old either. So maybe I'm not going to wrap it all. Because I was like, okay, so how old are these two people? So in that timeline on this show, Riri is like maybe in early, you know, like maybe late teens, early 20s. And Zeke is in his mid-30s, approximately, right? So I'm just like, so I looked it up and it was like, I was like, cause you know, my brain goes to my experience and my background, and basically they're both in early adulthood. Okay, so what's the big difference between them? Both of them are in the same stage of human development. YTV is a critical, of course, we know, cause the situation that she got him, you know, basically got him in, but also, he's very angry with her. And it also got me thinking about how during this stage of human development, people, it's a lot of stuff going on in people's lives. They're trying to establish who they are, their identity. They're trying to have some kind of emotional stability. They're trying to form intimate relationships, get married or whatever. And they're beginning a career. It's a lot of stuff going on in their lives socially. But in cognitively, in their brain, their thinking is changed also from childhood to early adulthood. You start having more nuanced thinking, and I guess that's what he's trying to accuse her of, not having nuanced thinking. Maybe he's right or maybe he's wrong, but it also got me to thinking about Ryan Coogler's specialty, which to me is what this story is, a coming of age story, a genre. In literature and film, it's a person's journey from childhood to adulthood. And I think Ryan Coogler is demonstrating in this series that is his specialty. This is what he does. He good at it, honey. I mean, he takes you through these scenes and these, nuanced, occurrences in these people's lives that help you understand that these people are going somewhere from somewhere, and they're going somewhere. And so they're growing and they're developing. And I like that. Yeah. My favorite scene in episode 4 has to be at Stanton Suites, Reads and More, because we meet a new character, Zelda. Love Zelma. I love the references to the chocolate factory. She talks about being the dutiful Oompa Loompa. Ronnie and Riri come in talking about, is this Willy? Why are you taking me Willy Wonka? I love that. It's one of my favorite stories out there. And even Zelma comes up with something called the Western Cortex of Neverish. I was like, what is that? Couldn't find that on there. But anyway, I was like, that was neat. But ultimately, I love this part because it also got me thinking about something that I have always been, contemplating on a philosophical level about good versus evil. And I know you ladies caught on to that also. And Zelma's mother, Miss Stanton, Maggie, she says bad magic is especially dangerous for good people. And it made me think about gazing into the abyss, which is a saying, something that a prominent philosopher, Nietzsche, said. And it made me look up the exact quote. It says, "He who fights with monsters might take care lest he thereby become a monster. And if you gaze for long into an abyss, the abyss gazes also into you." And so I was thinking about how Parker was specifically who I was thinking of as the character in this show who was gazing too long into the abyss. Like he was letting he was becoming the monster, a monster. He was trying to be different from his father, but he basically was becoming the monster that he hated. So, and then I also started thinking about, because they started saying different names for the hood, one person at the shop calls it a cape, another person calls it a cloak. I was like, okay, so what is it? It's a cloak. That's my conclusion. It's a cloak. Because it's not just a covering for the head and the neck like a hood. It is not like a short garment that hangs from your shoulders. It's not just a cape. It's not just a hood. It is a cloak. It's both. It is quite powerful. And that also got me thinking about what supernatural is, what that means in the whole scheme of this story. And it got me back, got me right back into that whole rabbit hole of the Victorian era ghosts, Christmas Carol, what's supernatural, what's natural, and I just kept going from there because eventually by the time we get to episode 6, I started thinking that the title of that episode was very apropos. It was, because the past is the past. To me, that says we're talking about ghosts of the past. We're talking about a Victorian ghost. We're talking about that whole thing about, and specifically about how the past can haunt you and how it can be a haunting force, which means that it can be natural and scientific, but also that it can be something that's more supernatural, which is beyond the laws of nature and science. So, I went down a lot of rabbit holes. But the one that I didn't think anybody was going to mention was, this is the last one, because I know we're limited with the timing, but what is Natalie? What is the AI that Riri, accidentally creates? Is the soul the same as your brain waves? To me, we just don't know. We just don't know. In neuroscience, they talk a lot about consciousness and how that relates to your experience as you're living your life. There's some people who believe in quantum, in the quantum basis of consciousness, where it's like a really, really, you're conscious because of some really, really, microscopic things going on in your brain that we really don't know. I just couldn't get an answer to that question, but I feel like Natalie is both. That's all I can say. That's all I can conclude. Natalie is both. She is a hologram. Because Riri calls her a hologram, a holographic manifestation. A hologram is a scientific term. A hologram is basically, you know, a recreation of an original image. That's what a hologram is. It's a recreation of something that actually exists, physically exists. But a manifestation is talking something more like a ghost or soul. So to me, it's both. I don't know if you could say she's one or the other, but I guess that's all I'll talk about. Thanks for letting me speak, ladies. I hope that I didn't, you know, go too far.
No, Jennifer. No, not at all. Thank you. And kind of took the fire out of the question I wanted to ask each of you, and I'm still going to ask it because it's the premise and the ideology. You know, it's important, right? The way I'm going to ask this question is, do you think when they showed Riri with Mephisto, did she make the deal, or is she thinking about the cost of the deal? Is she thinking about who she will become in her mind? Are we seeing that? Are we seeing the future? Are we seeing, in fact, what happens after the deal? Because she, for me, I said, okay, she made the deal because she started getting the veiny things, one of the causes. But as Jewel pointed out, you have to eat something. So, did she lose her soul? Her soul was already gone. Then we see Natalie come back. Is she talking through Natalie within the circle, or is she talking through Natalie out of the circle? So the question I'm going to ask, and each one of you, each at one at a time, unmute your mic and let me know. And then I'm going to ask the people who are going to be listening to this to let us know, do they think that Natalie is real, or do they think that Natalie is part of a dream sequence, meaning what really sees the life can be. Is it a magical thing, or is it a true thing? Because we do know that when we talk about history, that Hades, the devil, however you want to say it, is a tough thing to bring a dead person back from the ferryman. A very tough thing to do. Is Mephisto's magic that strong? So, first Jewel, then Jennifer. What do you think?
Ooh, we're back to the questions. I love it. Okay, thank you, Nikita, and thank you, Jennifer. I always appreciate you being here and giving us your take and letting us see perspective we may not have seen as we were watching it ourselves. Okay, the question. I think that it is a layered yes to all of it. And that's not a cop-out because this is how I see it. I think that we have to know, one, who Mephisto is. Mephisto is the king of hell. In the comics, he is the king of hell. That is his title. His name is Mephisto. He's the king of hell, the ruler of hell. And so it's difficult to trick the biggest trickster that's ever lived. Right, because that's who the devil is. And we know that of all the things that have happened from episode 1 all the way to episode 5 and the beginning of episode 6, Riri is privy to what happened to Parker Robbins as the Hood. We know that for every interaction, Zelma kept saying, it is a give and take with magic. What you put in, something has to be given in response. It is a give and take. It is not just you can use this as a power source. We also know there were two, not one, two power circles of protection. One at the top on the ceiling when someone was upside down, and one at the bottom. That made me think of reflection, like a mirror of reality. You put the mirror on the ceiling, you can see what's down below, and it's flipped. That made me think of how she was able to trick Parker. Because in the fight, and I don't want to spoil it, in the fight, she does something specific and is begging. You know what? She's begging for her life, okay? And she says, please don't do this, please don't do this, please don't do this. And what happens? We know that Parker fell for something. And it was just a reflection of what he thought was happening. And that's how she gets the cloak. I think that it is a reality of what can possibly happen as she's weighing her options logically, because if she gave into it, this is what the resolution would be at the end. And she is thinking it through like a person sitting down, looking at a calculation. There is a problem in front of you, and you have to do all the calculations, and you're writing it all out, and then you have a resolution, and you see how you got to the conclusion. We are seeing that. Okay, we are seeing that. She is protected by both circles, and the reflection of the world that is happening is tricking Mephisto into the resolution. So it's real to Mephisto. It's real for us to see it as what may happen, but I think she is protected because her soul, Natalie, is somewhere else. And she's doing this, agreeing with Mephisto and shaking his hand, but not eating. Because remember, you can't really eat in a dream. If you eat in a dream, you're stuck there, right? So she's not eating. She shakes his hand. But the end goal is to get Natalie back. Not living Natalie, but the AI. Because the AI, I still contend, is her soul. And in order to get that back, you have to make a deal with the devil. She has not technically made it because she tricked him. That's what I think.
Okay, Jennifer?
Well, it's all I can say after all of that. I probably need to rewatch it. But all I could think of at the end is the fact that she had those black veins. And whether or not those veins were a dream sequence or some kind of hologram that Riri was able to perform for Mephisto, I don't know. But I do know that those black veins say to me that those are battle scars from a supernatural fight. She has fought and won. That's what I want to believe. Because it also reminds me, going back to when I was thinking about the Outsider series, because at the end of that series, they changed it where Holly has a scratch from the supernatural being. And the scars that Riri has reminded me of that scratch that Holly had, that Holly went into a fight with a supernatural being. She won, but she didn't come out unscathed, right? So, to me, it was sort of saying that she won, and maybe that's just my, you know, naivety and my hope for her, because we do need to see more to really, really know, you know, what's happening next with Riri Williams, a.k.a. Ironheart.
All right, thank you both. So that same question is posed to those listening. If you get to the end of this and you get to the question, I'd like to see it either go to blurredwords.com, blurredword.com, or on X on Blurred Word, or on Instagram on blurred_word, and in any of the other social media platforms. Was it real? Was it a dream sequence? Talk about it to yourselves, you know, amongst yourselves, amongst your mutuals. I think this is a great show. I think that this was exciting to kind of do. I think it raised a lot of questions, and I think this is Ryan Coogler's year. That's all I'm going to say. This is Ryan Coogler's year. I also want to thank everyone for being in the room and listening and participating. And I also want to really, really say that Jewel and I, see how nervous I am, because I'm a nerd. But, okay, I'm also an introvert, and it's something that a lot of folks don't get. Introvert doesn't mean that we never speak. Introvert means we speak when we have something to say, and we have something to say. You know, we don't mix like everyone else does. I do hope that when you listen to this, we are a new podcast. There's a million billion podcasts out there. I hope you listen to it and it gives you new eyes and reflection, and lets some of you introverts out there know we see you, we hear you, and we are you. And we just want to be able to talk about stuff we like. And we like nerdy, blurdy things. We're Black and we're nerds. And it doesn't mean that everything we talk about is Black-centric. What it means is we look at things in a nerdy kind of way, whether it be Star Trek, whether it be The Empire Strikes Back, which not me, okay? But for those that do, we read books, we look at the world differently, not uniquely, just differently, and we want to talk about it because there's so many cool things out there, and I think it's kind of cool to chat, and I want to know how you feel. We want to know how you feel. So those of you that used to listen to us on the app, we're here at blurredsword.com and on Chatmosa under the BBOL show. Visit, check it out. And another thing I'd like to say, and there's a lot of another thing is, if you have something to say, don't let anyone stop you from saying it. It can be tough sometimes, but you'd be surprised how many people are interested in the same things you are. It's a whole big wide world out there. And no matter what your dream is, whether it is to build, whether it is to design, whether it is to write, it's never too late, because to create means to dream outside of, in my opinion. And art is reflected by the artist and those who receive the art. That's why we talk about books. That's why we talk about movies. That's why we talk about the things that we like, technology that's coming out, or anything, music, anything, because we too exist. And we want to thank you for visiting us and listening to us, and we hope you enjoyed it. And we're going to be doing this every Saturday. Next Saturday, folks, 12 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to be doing The Eyes of Wakanda. It's amazing. It's amazing. What is The Eyes of Wakanda, you may ask? The Eyes of Wakanda is another Ryan Coogler project, all right, BT Dubs, and it's an anthology, it's animation, beautifully done, I have to say. Next week, we're going to do that. It's very short. It's only 4 EPs. I'm so unhappy about that. Let's get that. Let's get that miniseries popping. And again, here with Ironheart, let's do a season 2 or make it a movie, but give us more. Because we deserve it. I want people, like I said last weekend, to watch movies and enjoy movies for the movies themselves. Let's be clear. Seeing Black creators out there, seeing Black artists, seeing Black directors, that is beautiful. Because just like seeing the indigenous community, just like seeing the Asian community, we all exist. And when we see ourselves, we have a certain pride and we have a certain thing of, man, we too can do this. And for those criticizing the MCU, go back and listen to our previous show. And also do a little homework, because the Marvel community has the most Black superheroes out of the DC community versus the MCU community. DC, you better get on that, because Marvel is doing it the right way. Disney Plus, great job. This Ironheart is very family friendly. I will pretty much say this, and I will probably say it again next week. This is one of those shows that's kid friendly, that's adult friendly, that's adult kid friendly. And if you're an adult that thinks you're a kid, that friendly too. It's for everyone. It is not about, you know, what you are, but it's about who you are. Someone who enjoys Marvel, someone who enjoys comic books, someone who's a nerd, someone who's a blurred, someone who's a person that just enjoys watching something that's good to watch. And this is good to watch. So we hope you watch and check out Ironheart on Disney Plus. And thank you. Have a beautiful, wonderful day. Jewel? Oh, yes, yes, yes. I don't forget. If you've ever went to our website, you will see that we have a rating system. It's 3 shades and 3 diamonds. I wear tinted sunglasses, literally, as a prescription. So those are shades. Those are the 3 glasses. Jewel, makes sense, right? The diamonds. So if you see us out in the world in the interwebs and you see shades and diamonds, that's us. So our rating system is 3 shades for good, that's me, that's Nikita, three diamonds for jewel. That's jewel. I give this myself three shades. Jewel, what do you give it?
I say three diamonds.
All right, so that's a total of six. That is our highest rating. Jennifer, what do you rate it?
All of it, all of it, all of the above, all of the diamonds, all of the shades.
Hurrah. And so there it is. We have it. Ironheart gets three shades, three diamonds from Blurred's words. Thank you so much. Nikita and Jewel on the BBOL show. Hope to see you next week. Jewel, you have the mic before I sign out completely.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for listening. Remember, if you haven't checked out the blogs, if you haven't checked out the episodes, go check them out, stream them, tell us what you think, read the blogs, let us know, answer the question Nikita posed. Was a very good question. We want to know what you think. We want to hear your voice. Thank you, guys. Thank you for everything. Thanks, Nikita. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you all. Thank you for showing up, Jennifer. And also, thank you for someone popping in earlier. We appreciate you, between doctors and friends. So I want to say this as I close it out. Don't ever be afraid to dream. Don't ever be afraid to begin. Don't ever be afraid to start over. Just do it. We hope that our podcast lasts for a while as we get better and better and better. And we hope you enjoy our content. So we will see you again next weekend, Saturday, 12 p.m. Eastern Time. We will also have some other projects coming up. For those of you that used to follow us on the old app there, you're going to start seeing some things, and we hope you enjoy it. We're going to be doing After the Pod. That will soon become a subscription service. If you're wondering what After the Pod is, that's when we talk about stuff that we don't talk about in the podcast. Have a great day. Be blessed. Have fun, and see you next weekend. Bye.
Bye.